You ever find yourself kind of, daydreaming about stumbling upon some forgotten deed that like grants you ownership to a, oh, I don't know, prime piece of real estate? Well, snap back to reality, folks, because today we're doing a deep dive on a legal principle that can turn that dream into a total nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
Adverse possession. And to really get into it, we're looking at Scott v. Anderson Tully Co., a classic case. Really clarifies the rules, at least in Mississippi.
You know, what I find so fascinating about adverse possession is it really challenges like those basic assumptions we have about property ownership. It basically says you can lose title to your land even if you have a deed.
Really?
Yeah. Simply because someone else was using it for a long enough time and in a very particular way.
Okay, so let's get into the specifics of this case here.
Yeah.
We've got Scott. He believed his family owned this 20-acre triangle of land.
Right.
But then there's Anderson Tully, this timber company. And they not only had a quit claim deed to the property right next door, but they claimed they'd gotten those 20 acres through adverse possession.
Yeah, and you know, this conflict really highlights a critical point here. Just holding a deed, it doesn't automatically guarantee ownership. Sometimes actions speak louder than words, or louder than deeds, I guess you could say, in this case.
Right.
Anderson Tully wasn't just like sitting on this land. They were using it actively for over 40 years.
40 years. That's longer than I've been alive. I mean, what were they even doing on this land to give them that strong of a claim?
Well, they treated it like, you know, any responsible landowner would, I guess. Marked boundaries. They used blue paint.
Blue paint.
And get this, they repainted those lines multiple times. They harvested timber. They issued hunting licenses for the land, really showing they were in control. And keep in mind, all of this was done openly. Hmm. Not in secret.
So it's almost like a public declaration, like, hey, everyone, look at this blue paint. This is all mine.
Exactly.
Okay.
Their actions weren't just about like using the land. It was about making this very visible, very public claim of ownership.
Okay, so that brings us to the real legal battle here. Did these actions actually meet the requirements for adverse possession, even if their original deed wasn't, you know, perfect?
Right. Well, that's where Mississippi law comes in. They have six specific elements you have to meet to claim adverse possession. In this case, this is a perfect example of how they actually play out in real life.
Okay, let's break it down then. Yep. First, claim of ownership. What does that even mean in this context?
Well, in Mississippi, it's not enough to just say this land is mine. You have to actually act like the owner. And Anderson Tully did that. They were actively using the land for their business, not just passively holding on to it.
So it's not just about words. It's about like proving it with your actions.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about this next element? Actual or hostile position. Does hostile mean things got, you know, aggressive?
Not necessarily. No. Hostile, at least in this legal sense, just means using the property without the owner's permission. Actual possession is, well, that's the physical use, like what Anderson Tully did with their timber operations and those hunting licenses. No dramatic showdowns needed.
So hostile is more of a legal thing than like an attitude thing. Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
This next one seems, well, pretty straightforward. Open, notorious, and visible.
Yeah, this one's all about transparency. Your actions, they have to be obvious. Anyone who even, you know, glances at the property. Anderson Tully's blue paint definitely made it hard to miss, like a community-recognized symbol almost.
Yeah, no kidding. Subtlety was not their strategy.
Yeah.
All right, so we got acting like the owner, doing it publicly. What about time? Like, how long do you have to be doing all this to claim ownership?
That's where continuous and uninterrupted for 10 plus years comes in. That's the magic number in Mississippi. And Anderson Tully was using this land for 41 years, way beyond the minimum.
Wow. All right. They definitely cleared that one. Okay. So what about exclusive possession? Did Scott try to use the land at all during those 41 years?
Well, from what we can tell, it doesn't seem like Scott was actively using the land during that time, which, you know, made Anderson Tully's claim even stronger. This element is really important because if the real owner, IS, using the land alongside the claimant, then it kind of weakens that argument for exclusive use.
Makes sense. So last but not least, we have peaceful possession. I'm assuming we're not talking about like an old Wild West showdown over timber rights.
Aha. No. Peaceful doesn't require, you know, absolute silence. It means no disputes, no legal challenges over the land during that possession period, no evidence of, you know, people running around with shotguns fighting over property lines. So, yeah, their timber operations were peaceful enough as far as the law is concerned.
Okay, so we've laid out all six elements of adverse possession, and Anderson Tully seems to have checked every single box. But I'm guessing Scott didn't just, like, give up, right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. Scott, he pushed back. And that's where things get even more interesting. He claimed he'd been paying taxes on the land since 1993. However.
There's always a however, isn't there?
Haha, right.
So paying taxes, that's not, like, a foolproof defense, then?
Not necessarily. While paying taxes can be evidence of ownership, it doesn't automatically, like, overrule a successful adverse possession claim, especially when someone else is actively using the land and, you know, meeting all those other requirements.
Okay, so what happened when all this went to court? Did the judge side with the Blue Paint crew?
They did, yeah. The lower court ruled in favor of Anderson Tully. The judge basically said they clearly met all six elements of adverse possession, so the land was legally theirs.
And I'm assuming Scott appealed this.
Of course. He took it to the Mississippi Court of Appeals, hoping for a different outcome.
And drumroll, please. What would the appeals court say?
They upheld the lower court's decision. They really emphasized that, you know, trial judges, they have that direct view of the evidence, the witnesses, and their conclusions on things like adverse possession, they should be given a lot of weight.
So, case closed. Blue Paint officially wins.
Well, not so fast. This is where it gets really interesting. One of the appeals court judges, Justice James, he wrote a separate opinion, agreed with the outcome, but he added this little wrinkle.
A legal plot twist. All right, I'm listening.
So Justice James, he questioned whether a couple of actions Scott took back in 2003 and 2007, the specifics weren't really laid out, but he wondered if those might have counted as objections to Anderson Tully using the land. And these objections, even though they were late in the game, could have maybe interrupted that continuous possession requirement.
Hold on. So even after 41 years, a last-minute objection could change things.
That was Justice James's point, yeah. But the majority of the judges, they dismissed it. They said Anderson Tully had already passed that 10-year mark, you know. Their adverse possession had, as they say, ripened.
So once that clock runs out, late objections don't really matter.
That seems to be the takeaway here, yeah.
Mm.
But Justice James's opinion, it does raise some interesting questions. Like, could there be some strategic advantage to objecting, even if that 10-year mark has passed? Could it maybe influence future disputes or negotiations even?
Hmm. Makes you think. And this is why I love this show, by the way. Getting into these little details, the what ifs, the could have beens.
Me too. It's these little details that really challenge how we think about things, you know, and they push us to think critically about these legal principles.
So for our listeners out there who might be lawyers, law students, or even just, you know, regular property owners, What's the big takeaway from Scott v. Anderson Tully? Besides the fact that apparently Blue Paint can be a powerful legal tool.
This case just screams, be proactive. You own land. Know your boundaries. Don't just assume everything's fine because you have a deed sitting in a drawer somewhere. Walk your property lines. Look for any signs that someone might be encroaching and keep good records. And if you see anything even a little off, address it right away.
Don't wait 41 years to notice your neighbors built a gazebo on your property.
Exactly. By then, yeah, it might be too late.
In this case, this was rural land, a timber company. But imagine this happening in, like, a densely populated area.
Oh, absolutely. Think about, like, neighbors fighting over a shared driveway, one that's been used for years, or a fence that's a little off, and one neighbor's been using a tiny bit of the other's land without realizing it. That's how adverse possession can really affect everyday life.
Yeah, suddenly it feels a lot less like some abstract legal idea, and more like something that could actually happen to anyone.
Right. And that's why it's so important to understand this idea of adverse possession.
Yeah.
Especially for us in the legal world, we got to be able to advise our clients and help them navigate these tricky situations.
Okay, so we've talked about those six elements, the court battles, the different opinions from the judges, but there's another part of this we haven't really touched on. The whole concept of adverse possession itself, like, where did this even come from? Why does it even exist?
It's a good point. The history and the philosophy behind adverse possession, they're often kind of overlooked, but they're really important to understand why it's part of our legal system.
So tell me, why do we have this law that lets someone take someone else's property? It just seems kind of counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it might seem that way at first, but there's a deeper logic here. Adverse possession, it came about from wanting to encourage land use and stable ownership. Mm-hmm. It pushes people to actively use and develop their land instead of just letting it sit there.
So it's almost like rewarding the person who's actively using the land.
Yeah.
being responsible and maybe penalizing the owners who are neglecting their property.
Yeah, exactly. Think of it this way. If someone's out there openly using a piece of land for years and they're taking care of it, improving it, even contributing to the community, it makes sense from a social and economic standpoint to recognize that, especially if the true owner is totally MIA.
It's almost like the legal system is saying, you know, use it or lose it.
In a way, yeah. Adverse possession really makes us think about what it means to be a responsible owner. It's not enough to just have that piece of paper, the deed. You got to actually be involved with your property.
This makes me think about those heir property cases, you know, where land gets passed down through generations, but without proper documentation. Could adverse possession pop up in those situations?
Oh, absolutely. Heir property cases, they often have like unclear ownership and a lack of those formal records, which makes them, well, prime targets for adverse possession claims. It really shows how important it is to have a clear title and to actively manage your land, especially when you're dealing with family history and inheritance.
So for all our listeners out there, maybe lawyers, law students, or even just, you know, people who own property, what are the key takeaways here from Scott V. Anderson Tully and this whole idea of adverse possession?
First and foremost, know the rules. Understand the specific elements of adverse possession in your state. It can change a bit from state to state, so knowing those exact requirements is crucial.
Don't just assume you know it all because you listened to this episode.
Aha, right? Second, tell your clients, be proactive. Encourage them to check their property regularly, document how they're using it, and if anyone's encroaching, even a little, deal with it right away. Don't wait for things to get out of hand.
Early intervention, that's key.
Exactly. And lastly, think about the bigger picture. Adverse possession, it's not just about these little legal technicalities. It's about a bigger idea, this idea of using land responsibly and actually being a responsible owner.
It's like a reminder that property rights, they come with responsibilities too. Well, I think we've covered a lot today. We've gone from blue paint boundaries to the like historical roots of adverse possession.
It's been quite a journey, and hopefully our listeners are walking away with a better understanding of this fascinating and often very misunderstood legal principle.
And for anyone still dreaming about finding that forgotten deed to some huge estate, just remember, adverse possession might be waiting right around the corner. So check those property lines, know your rights, and stay informed. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.
Until next time, keep exploring those legal twists and turns.